This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Radio is an ephemeral medium. Linda Wertheimer has tried to make it more lasting. She went through NPR's archives and selected reports, commentaries, and interviews that illustrate how America and NPR have changed in the past 25 years. She collected those pieces in a book to be published next month. It's called Listening to America, 25 Years in the Life of a Nation as Heard on NPR. Linda Wertheimer hosts All Things Considered. She's been with NPR since the first broadcast of the show, which she directed nearly 25 years ago. I wanted to catch up on some of her history. Linda, you started covering Congress, and then you were a political correspondent for NPR. This was all in the early to mid-70s that you started doing that. Mm-hmm. You were in that first wave of women to cover politics for national broadcasting outlets. Women, I think, in broadcasting, women in radio, I should say, face something that, say, print reporters didn't face, which is that women were told their voices weren't authoritative enough.
Absolutely.
Did you run into that a lot in the early period of your career?
Well, when I'm trying to find jobs, yes. And the thing is that it's illegal to say that now. I mean, no personnel person or editor would dream of saying such a thing. But a number of people said it to me. I remember one in an office at NBC, a man told me that women weren't authoritative delivering the news. And then he also told me that a very talented woman, whose name I actually recognized, had been a researcher at NBC for 10 years and that I should really aspire to a career like hers. And I threw a fit in the floor right on the spot.
What'd you say?
I just started yelling at him. I said, how can you possibly imagine that 10 years as a researcher is an attractive prospect for anybody? How can you say that? But it was that was the way it was. It was perfectly all right for him to say that, and he was amazed that I, you know, had the temerity to think that it should be otherwise.
So what would you go for? I mean, you couldn't rely on the law because this wasn't...
It hadn't happened yet.
It hadn't happened yet. Consciousness raising usually isn't an effective tool when you're applying for a job. So when you blew up, what could you say?
Well, you know, all I could do was leave. There was nothing to do. I did get a job working at WCBS News Radio in New York, and I worked there, although...
On the air?
No, although they had a couple of women reporters, including two of the most aggressive women reporters working in New York at the time, Mary Pangalos and Liz Trotta. And they routinely would cut their voices out of the pieces that they reported. But I mean, those were women who would get into anything, go anywhere, do anything. I mean, they were incredibly brave and aggressive and ferocious. And you know, and they did all that. I mean, they spilled their blood and got their voices cut out because they weren't authoritative. I mean, the chief of police of New York City, if you had suggested to him that either one of those women was not authoritative, he would suggest to you that you were out of your mind. But because he had, you know, he had had a few experiences with them. But it was just a time. That's the way it was then.
Where was the first place where you actually got on the air?
National Public Radio. That was the first. And actually, I wasn't hired at NPR to go on the air. But NPR was hiring women to go on the air, and the lines of opportunity were very clear. The possibilities were clear and were pretty immediate.
Did you face any difficulties as a woman covering politics and covering Congress? Did the men, and it really was men then in those positions, did they take you seriously, or did they give you a hard time because you were a woman?
Well, you know, all of these things are relative. Now, covering Congress is almost women's work. If you sit down at the press table now in the dining room of the House or Senate, you will be sitting with, I would think, probably somewhat more women than men. Newspapers have women up there. Broadcast organizations do. But when I sat down at that table in the very beginning, you know, in the early 70s, I was very often the only woman there. And there were sometimes these language I could use if Linda weren't here, or a joke I could tell you if Linda weren't here, that sort of thing. That sounds so old-fashioned, doesn't it? And there was a lot of funny stuff, you know. There were a lot of little ladies. I remember Senator James Allen of Alabama, for whom I had the greatest respect. I and a great deal of affection because he was a real principled person. Senator Allen used to always call me Little Lady, and I would call him Big Senator, and then he would apologize for calling me Little Lady, but he truly just didn't think of it. You know, it was a generational thing, I suppose. But generally speaking, politicians are very modern people. You know, they look at me, and they see 15 million people are standing behind me, and I am I'm the thin edge of the wedge. I'm the listening ear, but 15 million people standing behind me will also hear. And so, you know, I could be, you know, green. I could be anything, and they would talk to me.
You said that there's probably more women than men now covering Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
Well, yeah, I don't know why that is. I think it may be that in the 80s, Congress became a kind of boring thing. You know, it was completely gridlocked in the late 80s. Nothing was happening. The Democrats were in charge of the Congress, the Republicans were in charge of the White House, and there was, you know, and never the twain shall meet. Politics got very obstreperous and argumentative and amounted really to nothing. And I think that that the fact that it was not critically important to our nation's future for a few years meant that some of the low people on the totem pole got sent to the Congress, and I'll say, you know, in a lot of shops, that's women. So I think that may be it. Now it's a very interesting place. You know, now it is absolutely at the top of the news, and of course, some of those women are still there. And now attitudes have changed toward who are the stars in our shop. You know, the New York Times, for example, has Maureen Dowd is their sort of commentator of choice on Washington these days. So lots of things have changed in the world for women at work. We have a number of reporters who cover Capitol Hill, but our national political correspondent, Elizabeth Arnold, is one of the, you know, sharpest and best we have. And, of course, we want her there when big things are happening.
Linda Wertheimer is my guest, and she's edited a new book called Listening to America, 25 Years in the Life of a Nation, as heard on National Public Radio. The book is not out yet, but it will be out in next month. Linda, you grew up in New Mexico?
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I started hearing you on NPR, I just assumed you were from New York. Your voice just said New York to me. Obviously, I'm incredibly wrong.
Well, my family, no one in my family had a strong, you know, Western or Southwestern accent. And I have no idea why that was, because they were all from the West and Southwest. My father was born and raised in Louisville, Texas, and my mother was born in a wonderful a town with a wonderful name of Loco, Oklahoma. And so we're Westerners for generations, but I went to Wellesley College, which I suppose. Where they did think that I had an accent, although they thought it was mostly on funny words. I mean, I would say things like fixing to, meaning I'm about to. Or once I said striped. And I didn't say that again. But there were, I don't know, we don't talk very Southwestern, I think.
I know your father ran a grocery. Did you have to work in the store?
I did. I worked. I delivered groceries on Saturdays and worked in the store in the summertime. I grew up in a town called Carlsbad, New Mexico, which is famous for the Carlsbad Caverns. Well worth a trip if you're in the area. And it is it's not a very big place, and there's nothing close to it. You know, it's not like living in Evanston and being close to Chicago. It's 150 miles to the next sizable city, El Paso. And between Carlsbad and El Paso, there's not much. So it was a very self-contained place and very peaceful. And when I delivered groceries, I would just walk into people's kitchens, and if nobody was there, I would put their groceries. I would put the, you know, ice cream in the freezer and milk in the refrigerator before I left. And the doors were never locked.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, when did your parents start listening to you on the radio?
Late. My family, there were not radio stations. You know, the West was one of the difficult areas for us, just simply because of the size of the place and because population centers are so spread out. Eastern New Mexico University put a translator up on the Cap Rock, which is a geological formation near Carlsbad, and all of a sudden you could hear it in Carlsbad. My mother lived in Texas in the last part of her life, and she could hear the station in Odessa. But it was really only just the last few years of their lives that they were able to hear what I did for a living, I'm sorry to say.
But they probably liked it once they heard it.
Well, you know, my mother did. My mother was very proud of what I did. My father was always explaining to me why it was that he was listening to, who's the man who says, page two?
Paul Harvey?
Yes. That he listened
you
to Paul
Harvey.
You
lost out to Paul Harvey.
I did.
Oh, well.
With my father.
Can you tell the story of the day you took your mother with you as you were covering your beat in Washington?
Well, in those early days, you know, when my parents weren't really able to hear the radio program, I was just so wanted them to know what I did and to understand it and appreciate it and so on. And when my mother was visiting here one day, I took her with me to the Hill, and we sat down in the president's room, which is the lobby off the Senate chamber. And I asked the doorman to ask Senator Muskie to step outside and for an interview. And he came, and I introduced him to my mother and said that, you know, she was visiting. And then we sat down and did the interview, and I asked him some sort of searching questions, and then he kind of equivocated, and I asked him a follow-up question and challenged him and so on. And I was being, you know, the reporter and being tough with the senator and so on. And I thought, wow, my mother is really going to see that, you know, that this man feels that he owes me straight answers and that I'm going to insist on getting them and that I'm going to get them. And he left, and my mother looked at me, and I was, you know, sitting there just thinking, wow. And she said, I didn't bring you up to talk to people like that.
So what was your reaction when your mother did that? I mean, you were trying to impress her, and she's here. She's being critical.
Well, my mother had the ability. I mean, I suppose all mothers have the ability, but my mother was really good at making you instantly six years old. And all I could do was just laugh. It was just so funny. But do you remember in the book, there's an essay, there's a piece that Linda Barry did, the cartoonist Linda Barry, and she's talking about love. This was a Valentine's Day piece. And somebody says to her, Linda, why is it that you can look across a crowded room and you see somebody and, wow, that's the person for you? And she said, it's the unerring ability of humans to enter a room and look around for the person who most nearly resembles their mother.
Linda Wertheimer hosts All Things Considered. She's edited a new book called Listening to America, 25 Years in the Life of a Nation as Heard on NPR. It will be published next month. This is Fresh Air.